And the topic for this evening's talk is nothing less than the meaning of life. And it sounds like a very kind of highfalutin title, but actually it's the reason I choose this title is because Buddhism has a lot to say about this question. This question, which philosophers have argued about over thousands of years, centuries, and nobody really seems to get a grasp on, which we all probably think about from time to time. The beautiful thing about Buddhism, it actually has something to say about this profound, most important question in many ways in all our lives. And that's why I want to talk about this. And we all know how when we're young, we often discuss the meaning of life between ourselves and our friends. And how often, when you are in your late teens, maybe your early 20s, you consider these things. It's very important. What could the meaning of life be? What am I here for? And then later on, as we become older, we get trapped in all the daily duties we have, the work we have, family life, paying off the mortgage. All these other things become so important in our lives that these big questions, like what the meaning of life is, becomes lost because of all these daily activities that we have. But actually, when you think about it, it's actually a very important question. Because if you can come to some kind of understanding what the meaning of life is, then of course all the other things tend to fall into place. It like gives you the overall picture. It gives you kind of the grand scheme of things. And everything else in life becomes quite obvious and clear what you should be doing. And when you're young, when you're just setting off on life's journey, you have to decide what sort of schooling you want to do. You have to decide the kind of career you're going to have. You have to decide if and with whom you're going to get married, what sort of lifestyle you want to lead, what religion you're going to choose, if any religion, what you're going to believe in, basically. What is this all about? And of course, when you're young, these are important questions because you're just starting off, and it tends to set the course for the rest of the life, those decisions you make at the very early point. And of course, if you then can have an answer, some idea what the meaning of life is all about, then suddenly all these other things tend to fall into place. And it becomes quite much more easy to decide on all these grand questions in your life because you have an overall understanding what this existence of ours is all about. But as I said, usually we forget about this after a while. We forget asking this question because we think there's no answer to this question. We think that somehow this is beyond our ability to understand what the meaning of life is all about. And one of the reasons why we fail to find the answer to this question is simply because we look at it in the wrong way. And very often the way that people look at this question, what is the meaning of life, they tend to look at what is the kind of the purpose of our society? Where is the universe going? Are we going towards some kind of a harmonious, ideal society sometime in the future where we're all going to be happy, all be sort of rejoicing together in harmony. And you can read many books about these kind of theories or how we're all sort of moving forward. We're all developing in a certain direction and eventually we'll reach a certain point when things are just right or just wrong, or right for some people and wrong for others, or maybe right for everybody. And this is a kind of, we look at the kind of grand scheme of things. Where is this universe going? Where are we all going with this universe? Where is society developing? Are we going in the right way? And from a Buddhist point of view, that is the wrong way to look at it. If you look at it that way, you're never going to find an answer to the meaning of life. Is it the case that we're all moving in the right direction, that we're all going somewhere, that the society is moving towards some kind of ideal, some kind of harmony, where we all happy and all rejoicing and living in harmony with each other? Is that really the case? And from a Buddhist point of view, the reason why we even tend to think this way in terms of society as a whole going somewhere, the reason we think this way in the first place, there's two reasons, I think, at least that I can think of. And one is this sense of self that we have. Because we have a sense of self, that I am somebody, there's something permanent in here, which is me. I am this, I have a self. It gives us a sense of self-importance. We are somebody. We are something which lasts in this universe, which moves on through all these changes in the universe. And because of that, because we are somebody, we are something important, That means there must be a reason for this whole existence of ours. We must be like a small cog in this grand universe which moves towards the omega point, the final destination of all of us, which is so important. Otherwise, why do we exist? Why are we something special? Why do we have this unique existence of ours, unless there is a purpose for it? So the sense of self, this kind of immediate feeling that we are somebody, gives us a sense of self-importance, which makes it natural to think that this universe is going somewhere, we are also going somewhere. And the other reason I think that people often believe that the universe must have some kind of purpose, that this whole big machinery is going somewhere, is because there is a sense that we were created by somebody. This universe has been created, and once you believe in the creative force which has started this whole universe, well, then again, it's natural to think that it must have some kind of purpose. Because why would some creative force create this universe? Why would a creative force create each one of us? Well, obviously, because there is somewhere to go. There is a reason for all of this. There's something, there's a grand plan behind this whole universe, a scheme. And we're all moving along together in this grand scheme. So these are the two important reasons I can think of. Well, we tend to think in terms of the meaning of life, in terms of this whole universe, this our society of ours, going in a certain direction, going towards some kind of destination in the future. But of course, the point is that from a Buddhist point of view, firstly, there is no, as we look at it, there is no permanent self inside of us. You look inside of you, we all see that there are thoughts running all over the place all the time. There are feelings running all over the place, perceptions, all kind of things. And from a Buddhist point of view, there is no enduring entity within us that we can call a self. Neither is there a creator God, according to Buddhism. This universe has not been created by some external force which put this whole thing into existence. And once you remove those two things, the two ideas of a permanent self, or of a creation, a creator God, or a creator outside of us, then you take away a lot of this idea that this universe has to have some kind of purpose. And indeed, if you look at the way Buddhism looks at these things, there isn't really any purpose to this universe. This universe just goes on according to causes and conditions, moves on from eon to eon, universe to universe, round and around. It's more like, if you want to put any name on how this universe evolves, it is more according to cycles, universe after universe, eon after eon. And the same thing is also true for our individual lives. From a Buddhist point of view, our individual lives also, birth, old age and death, followed one after the other, again and again and again. It's a cyclical existence, going round and round and round, often doing the same things again, life after life. And when we see this again, we realize that this is the way Buddhism look at these things. Not that there is some kind of ultimate purpose, somewhere we are all going, but that there is a cyclical existence in this thing. So once we understand this, we can discard, or not discard, maybe we can put less faith in this idea that the universe is actually going somewhere here, that we're all moving towards some kind of perfect society or anything like that. And we have to look for the purpose of life, the meaning of life, somewhere else. And the way that I would ask what is the purpose of life, instead of the meaning of life, let's say instead the purpose of life. The way to look at it instead is to look inside ourselves and ask us, well, what is it that we all desire? What is it that we all want? Because if you can actually find out what you really want, what you really desire inside of yourself, then, of course, the fulfillment of that desire, the fulfillment of that want, that should really be the purpose of life. If you can fulfill the most profound yearning that you have, then you're also in a way, finding the very purpose of this existence. So for a few moments, just try to think about your life. What is it that we all really desire? And take a kind of daily life situation. And it's not very difficult to understand. Well, how do we make decisions in our daily life? Small little things in daily life. What do you choose to eat? What do you choose to wear when you get up in the morning? Which people do you choose to talk to? What articles do you read in a newspaper? What television programs do you want to watch? All these little decisions that we make throughout our day, how are those decisions taken? And they are taken on the basis of what, in one way or another, will make us happy. What is more pleasurable? What is beneficial for us? What will give us the right energy to endure throughout the day, to do all the duties that we have to do? All of these things, in one way or another, are made so that it will be for our benefit and for our happiness. This is how all our decisions are made throughout the day. And you can ask yourself not only about all the daily decisions, but ask yourself also about those long-term decisions in life. What education we're going to have, what sort of job we're going to have, where we want to live, what religion, what philosophy of life you choose. What is the driving force between that is behind making these kind of choices? And again, it is what you think is going to give you contentment and satisfaction in the long run. What is going to give you a sense of peace and harmony with the society around you? What is going to give you pleasure and happiness in your life? Why do you come to the Buddhist society here? Again, it's because you think that this is going to give something to your life. If you didn't think that Buddhism had anything to offer you in your life, nothing at all, there would not be no point in coming to the Buddhist society here. You wouldn't be here. And I also like to say, well, why do I come here? Why do I bother coming here, sitting, giving a talk? And again, the reason is the same. I believe that in the long run, it's going to be beneficial for me here, and also maybe beneficial for some other people who come to these talks. And that's why I do it, because I think there's going to be a benefit out of that. So again, we can see how there's a happiness underlying all these various things that we're searching for can be classified as happiness in one way or another. We're all searching for that happiness in our lives. And we can even take it down to very small things in your life. Like when you're sitting there now, you will be moving a little bit, twitching a little bit, scratching a bit here and there. Of course, again, it's the same thing. We're trying to get away from a little bit of pain, a little bit of irritation, trying to find comfort in this body, which is so difficult to find comfort in over long periods of time. And again, it's trying to move towards pleasure, towards contentment, towards happiness. And everything which drives us in life is basically a movement towards finding happiness in life, finding contentment in life, finding something which satisfies us. And in brief, I will call that thing that we're searching for, I'll just call it happiness to make it easy, just to find one word which maybe can summarize all those things that we're trying to have in our lives. It's called happiness. So this then becomes the purpose of life. The purpose of life becomes to satisfy that happiness that we are all yearning for. This is what life is all about. And it becomes very obvious when you think about it. This actually is the purpose of life. The reason that we often forget about the fact that this is the purpose of life is because this idea of happiness seems so elusive. It's so hard to get to. It's so hard to really know what this happiness is. And even if you know what it is, it's very hard to actually get hold of it. And that is why often we forget about the fact that this actually is the purpose. But by looking inside your mind, looking at what you really want in your life, it's not that hard to see that this is where we all want to go. Now the problem that arises at this point, once we realize that we want to be happy, is, well, what actually is that happiness that we really desire? It can be so hard to understand sometimes, because there are different types of happiness. Sometimes there are the pleasures of life, going to the movies, eating nice food, relationships, and all these things. And then there are other types of happiness, the happiness of being peaceful, of being tranquil, of a sense of contentment, of the joy in the mind that we can sometimes have. And this is, in a sense, another type of happiness. So where should we actually seek for happiness? We know we want to be happy, but what really is this happiness? And even though, because we know that even though everybody out there in one way or another is pursuing that happiness, very few people actually ever really get it. People are still depressed. People are still down, they're still grieving of lost friends and relatives. And very often they don't find that really peaceful, contented, joyful happiness which is on offer in this life. And the reason is because they're looking in the wrong place. And I will illustrate for you one important distinction that the Buddha made in these types of happinesses. He made a distinction between what you might call worldly happiness and, on the other hand, spiritual happiness. These are the two main distinctions, maybe, that the Buddha can be said to have made. And I have talked about this here before, but I find it such an interesting topic that I want to talk about it again. So what is the difference between the worldly happiness and the spiritual happiness? And the worldly happiness is all the happiness of the senses, the five senses, that we get from seeing things, hearing things, touching things, etc. It is a kind of happiness that we get when we get a promotion at work, when we get a salary increase, when we get maybe into a powerful position, when we get famous, or when a good report spreads around about us. This person, he or she is a very nice person. All of these things are like worldly happinesses. And this is the happiness on the one side. And the Buddha specifically said that these are worldly happinesses. And then on the other hand, you have the spiritual happinesses. And the spiritual happinesses are the happinesses which come from a spiritual lifestyle. Happiness which come from being moral, from doing good, from being kind, from being generous, from being peaceful, having loving kindness and compassion in your life, from doing meditation practice. All of those positive qualities that we develop inside of our mind, well, that happiness which comes from that, that is the spiritual happiness. And this is one of the most important distinctions that the Buddha made about happiness. And why is it that one of these happinesses is to be sought for, whereas the other one is not so important according to the Buddha's teachings? And the reason is as follows, and I will quote something again which I have quoted here before. And this was an experiment that was done in the United States a long time ago, which showed what happens when people enjoy sensual pleasures. How does it affect the mind when we enjoy sensual pleasures? And this experiment, if I remember correctly, was done at Harvard University back in the 1970s. So it's the kind of highest pedigree of experiments. This is not just some kind of random thing at all. And what they found, which was very interesting, was that we all, in a sense, start off with a certain level of happiness in life. We are like, in a sense, here or something like that. This is where we start off. Some people start off higher, some people start off lower, but we sort of start off at a certain level. And then when we have an experience of some kind of sensual pleasure, say a meal, or we go to see a nice movie or something, then there is like a little peak experience up from that plateau where we're normally at. Peak experience comes, and soon after we had that meal, soon after we've seen that movie, it comes down again. And this is what happens with sensual pleasures. And then when it comes down again, it comes down exactly to where it was before. This is the extraordinary thing. We're searching for these pleasures, but always when it's over, it comes back down again to exactly where it was before. Or take a larger thing in life. You get a new house, you get a new car, something which may be much more important in your life, and the happiness you get lasts a little bit longer. You start off again where you were before, the happiness goes up, it lasts for a while, but slowly but surely the excitement of that new house, that new car, comes down again. Down, down, down. After a few weeks, after a few months, you come down again, all the way down to where you were before. And this is the way it goes on and on. Happiness after happiness, sensual happiness after happiness. You get a promotion in your job. You feel really excited because when you get a promotion, you feel valued by your boss or by your peers in your job. So it feels wonderful to get that promotion. But the same problem again, slowly but surely, it comes down, 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 down. And it comes down to the same level it was before, and down there. And you can see what's going on here. You always find this happiness, but it's ephemeral. It disappears. It doesn't actually remain. And of course, when something doesn't remain, what happens? Well, you look back at the happiness and you think, oh, I wish I had that happiness again. And then craving and desire arises within you to do the same thing again, again and again and again. And each time you do it, the same thing happens. It goes up and then it goes down again. It goes up and it goes down. Always leading to this disappointment. And because it's disappointing, you try it again and again and again. And this is how most people live their lives from one end to the other. Up and down, up and down, up and down. And not really getting anywhere at all. And of course, one of the biggest happinesses in life, I'm happy to talk about this as well, because this is what we maybe seek more than anything else. And this is the happiness of a good relationship, the happiness of falling in love initially, and then having a good relationship afterwards. But even this idea of falling in love, it is something which is maybe some of the highest happiness that some people experience, and yet even that comes down again after a while. It lasts maybe for a year, I think a year and a half. Sometimes it's quoted how long these feelings can last. But sure enough, it comes down again, that as well. You cannot be in love forever and ever. It's going to disappear. So again, there is no permanent satisfaction in falling in love either. And then there is the reverse thing. And the reverse thing is also important. And that sometimes we have sensual disappointment instead of sensual happiness. We get a demotion in our job and we go down, bam. And we get depressed, we grieve, and we feel really unhappy. We feel appreciated by our boss or by our fellow workers because they have demoted us. Or we get a salary reduction because the company isn't doing so well. And again, we feel down. But even on these occasions, when something happens which is unpleasant, even if it's just food maybe which doesn't quite agree with you, again, it comes up again, slowly but surely. And after a while, you have forgotten about that experience. And again, you go up to almost exactly the level you were before. So this is what life is like. You start off at a certain level, and it goes up and down, up a bit more, down a bit more. You have some deep downs and some high ups. But then, on your deathbed, you are roughly where you were when you started off. It's terrible, isn't it? It looks so pointless when you see it that way. You wonder what was, and that's why so many people come to the end of their life to think, what was this all about? What was the purpose of all this? Yes, I had a few happinesses, I had a few sorrows, but at the end of the day, I'm exactly where I started. And I leave the world exactly in the same way as I came into this world. I didn't have anything when I came in. I leave everything behind again when I go. What was this all about? And it's a good question. It's a good question to ask. What was it all about? Because this is where it leads us, of course, over to the spiritual happiness. And this is the other way of looking at the other type of happiness which the Buddha praised. This is the real happiness, the happiness which really matters. And the difference between this happiness and the worldly happiness can again be found in certain experiments, and many of people may have read about them, which have been done recently also in the United States. They seem to be at the forefront of this sort of research. And what they did there, they actually found out that in the human brain, there is like certain areas which have a tendency to become active when we experience certain types of happiness or happiness in general. And because they have figured this out, they were actually able to find out how happy various people can be. And they measured various types of people. And some of the people they measured were people who actively led a spiritual life. People who were good people, who meditated, who did good things in their lives. And they found that the more spiritual practice you were doing, in particular, this was about meditation practice, the more you did of it and the more success you had in your meditation practice, the more happiness you scored on this particular scale that they had devised. And that was an amazing result. It was an amazing result that the real happiness, and the point about this happiness is not a happiness which fades away. This was, remember, they were actually put under certain brain scanning machines, all kinds of electronic equipment. This was happiness that was almost like imprinted in them. Because the longer you had practiced the spiritual life, the more happy you were. In other words, it was a result of a long term of practice. It wasn't a result of some kind of gratification that you were having just on that particular day. And this was it's an amazing result. And this fits perfectly with how the Buddha taught. Because the real, important and interesting happiness to be had in life is precisely the spiritual happiness. And the way to look at this, to go back to this idea of levels of happiness, you start off on a certain level in life. But then when you lead a spiritual life, I'm going to give maybe one easy example to understand. Suddenly you want to do something good in your life. You get this sense, this urge of doing something spontaneously nice to somebody, say something nice, because you really feel like it in your heart. This is not a superficial kind of kindness, this is a real kindness. You feel like doing something nice, you help somebody, you give somebody something when they need something, and how do you feel after doing something spontaneously nice towards somebody? You feel good inside of you. There's a happiness which arises from doing something kinder, doing something generous. And we all know what that feels like when we think about it. And that is it's a little bit like the sensual happiness. It's a peak experience there. It's a different type of happiness, but it's a happiness nonetheless, a kind of peak experience which comes with that kind action. And then afterwards, it comes down again. But when it comes down again, it doesn't come down precisely to the same level it was before. It leaves a little residue inside of the mind. And that is the important difference between the spiritual happiness and the worldly happiness. The spiritual happiness leaves a residue in the mind. So the mind is lifted up a small stage. Each time you do something good, the mind is lifted up a tiny fraction. And this is exactly the same thing which happens if we are virtuous, if we are kind and good people who do the right thing in the world. Every time we do something good, every time we decide that we're going to be nice and kind, we are slowly but surely lifting up our mind, step by step, stage by stage. Each time we do a meditation on compassion, on loving kindness, we become more peaceful, and we have a general good feeling for the world. We are lifting our minds up, stage by stage by stage. And of course, you can see what happens here. If you keep doing this over time, instead of getting this flat curve, which starts off here and ends up over here at the end of your life, you get an inclination going upwards, lifting yourself up, going higher and higher and higher. Of course, sometimes we're going to fail. We're not always going to be able to be kind and generous and do the right thing. Sometimes it's going to go wrong. And of course then, instead of pointing up, we're pointing a little bit down. So it also goes a little bit down. But then we catch ourselves and we start to go up again. So the difference then between the sensual happiness and the spiritual happiness is that if we practice the spiritual happiness in a successful way, we are going to actually lift ourselves up, lift our mind up, stage by stage, going upwards and upwards and upwards. And of course, when you come to your final days, when your time comes to lay down your body and say goodbye to this world, you are on a different level from where you started off when you came into this world. And that is the beautiful thing about the spiritual happiness. It takes you somewhere. When you look back, you say, wow, this life was really worthwhile. Because I've gotten somewhere. I've changed myself for a better person. I'm happier, more content, more satisfied with my life now than I was when I came into this world. I've gone somewhere. And on the way, because I have been kind and good and generous person, on the way, I've also helped other people, done good in this world, and brought other people with me on this beautiful spiritual journey, which actually takes us somewhere. So now you can start to see here what this life is all about. This life is all about to find this true kind of happiness, this real satisfaction, which can be gained by practicing a spiritual life, practicing good, doing what is right, so we can actually go somewhere in our life. We can actually take ourselves somewhere and end up in a different place from where we started off. That becomes the purpose. That becomes what life is really all about, ultimately. So this is the Buddhist answer to this question. What is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? So why is it then? One of the things I want to ask also is, why is it then that so many people, they may hear the Buddhist teachings, they may hear the sort of things that I'm saying tonight, and I'm certainly personally convinced that this is a very valid way of looking at the world. And you may agree with me that this is a valid way of looking at the world. And yet, why is it that many people, they hear the Buddha's teachings, they hear other good spiritual teachings, and yet they turn their back to these things? They don't actually understand it. And why is it that even if we are Buddhist, why is it that sometimes we don't maybe put in that effort that we really would like to put into our practice? Why is it that sometimes we fail, we don't make as much progress as we would like? Why is it that even in monastic life, sometimes I sit in my kuti and I wonder, why am I not putting in more effort into my practice? Because sometimes it happens with all of us that we could put in more effort into our practice. And I think one of the answers to this is, again, like I started off talking about, is this idea of a self inside of us. And the problem with the idea of a self inside of us is that we have a sense of permanence inside of us. We have a sense of who we are. And because we have this sense of permanence inside of us, it is often very difficult to understand that it is possible to change around, to become very different from what we already are. And because we are not able to see fully that potential for change, potential for transformation inside of us, that is often the reason why we maybe neglect and don't put in sufficient effort in our life to actually transform ourselves. And the way to understand this is that if you look inside of yourself, you see, well, this is who I am. This is me. And those, the way you feel about yourself, the way you think about yourself, this is you, right? This is how we think we are. And one easy way of seeing this, for example, if a person gets very depressed, what happens if people get very depressed? Or they grieve a lot because they have lost somebody close to them? Sometimes people commit suicide because of those things. We see this all the time. Why do people commit suicide? Because they think that this is like a permanent condition. They're not able to see here that this is temporary here, and that one day they will get out of this problem, out of this suffering in their lives. And this is a problem that we often have in our lives. We tend to see our present state as permanent, as something which is there. And of course, if you are depressed and you think it's permanent, you get into a very kind of hopeless situation. So one of the most important things, therefore, always to tell somebody who is sad, or who is depressed, who is unhappy, is always to say, well, remember, this is impermanent. This too will pass, as Ajahn Brahm would always say here. And that is one of the most important things to remember here. And this is also important to remember on the spiritual path itself, that this, the way I am now, is not permanent. I don't have to be this way I am now. I can change. If you take the idea of a self completely out of the equation, and you realize that we are conditioned beings, external condition work on us, then suddenly you take away the limits of potential for change. Suddenly there is no limit anymore for how much happiness, how much contentment, how much peace, how much satisfaction you can find in your life. That limit is taken off. And suddenly you start to understand the potential of the spiritual life is enormous. It is very likely to be beyond every one of us here's wildest dreams what is possible to actually attain in this spiritual life. That is what is at stake. It's something truly marvelous. The end of all suffering, the highest possible happiness, Nibbana, that is what really is at stake with this spiritual life. So be careful in believing too much in the way that who you are now, this person you are now, this is going to last. There is enormous potential there. And when you read what the Buddha taught, when you see maybe other people who have practiced for a long time, you can sometimes infer that there is something there which is available, something much higher, something which we all can attain if we put in the right effort. And that is, so don't allow this illusion that we call in Buddhism, this illusion of a permanent self inside, don't allow that to stop you
from attaining your potential for moving on. Remember that the potential for change is almost unlimited. So that is essentially my talk this evening. It's about the purpose of life. And the purpose of life is to find that satisfaction, that happiness that we're all yearning for, that we're all seeking for, but which so many people find so difficult and so hard to really understand. That is what we have to look. And if we look towards the Buddhist teachings, that is, in my opinion, the best place to look if you want to find that sort of complete and final satisfaction in your life. Okay, that is the talk. Okay, so are there any questions or comments or complaints or anything else? This is a chance you have. Yes, at the back there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true, because what you can say is that expending of energy to actually do the practice, that is a kind of suffering in life. It's a kind of suffering. And because we don't want to suffer, we tend to steer away from those sort of things, which is too much ardor and takes too much energy. That is true. And of course there, it is important just to have that faith. The faith and understand that if I put in this energy, I will actually overcome much more suffering in the future. So that is where the faith comes in, and the understanding of the Dhamma, understanding of the Buddha's teachings. And then you will accept, okay, a little bit of suffering now is worth it in the long run. It's like keeping the five precepts. If you're a committed Buddhist and you decide that you want to keep the five precepts, which is like the basic moral code of Buddhism, well, there is a little bit initially, a little bit of suffering involved in keeping the five precepts. There are certain things you can't do. If previously you enjoyed, lying to people or drinking alcohol or whatever it is, or maybe even, I don't know what, but if you enjoyed previously something which was against the five precepts, then you have to stop that. And that very stopping involves a little bit of suffering. But of course, in the long run, you gain much more happiness in return by actually keeping those five precepts. And it's the same thing with the entire path of Buddhism. People often go on meditation retreats, and some of those retreats sometimes can be suffering for people. Maybe not all the time, but certainly part of the time, because you're doing things which you're not used to do. But then if you persevere, if you do it correctly, then eventually you also get those wonderful results that come from that meditation practice. So yes, it's true. There is the suffering of leading the spiritual life. It is true. But so you have to, in a sense, if you want to evaluate your spiritual life, never look in the short term. The short term can be very deceptive. Always look in the long term. So look at yourself today compared to what you were 6 months ago or a year ago. That's the kind of time span you need to look at to really see whether there is a change for the better, for the positive. And then you will make the right decision whether the spiritual life works or not. If you just look from 1 week to the next, because the mind is so changeable, it is impossible to really see an improvement and to have any kind of proper perspective just from 1 week to the next one. You happy with that answer? Yeah. Yes, sir. I just wanted to explore Buddhism, so maybe it's a Buddhist question. The meaning of life is happiness. What happens then? What is the meaning of being happy this life? And when I'm dying, to have more happiness than when I'm born.
Okay.
How much happiness do I need to be born?
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, being happy is not so bad in itself, It's pretty, it's pretty good. When you think about, sometimes we get depressed, people get into very difficult situations, and you can't wait to get out of it. Then, of course, happiness is something wonderful and something that becomes very beautiful. And the happier you get,
You look back at your previous life, you think, oh, that was terrible what I had before. I didn't actually realize at the time how bad it was. But now I understand that there was a lot more suffering in that life than I could really see. And the reason is because the suffering is so close to you, the life is so close to you, you don't really fully understand it. So the higher up you get, the more higher you still want to go. So eventually, you go from life to life. Maybe you feel happier in your future life. Sometimes happiness is the wrong word, because sometimes what we're seeking is really contentment and peace, because these are actually more profound and deeper senses of happiness than just pure kind of excitement or whatever. But each life, you can build on what you did in the previous life. You can even end it in this life if you really work really hard. But if you have to, you go on in the future lives, from life to life, going higher and higher. And the ultimate goal is Nibbana or Nirvana. And this is the highest happiness according to Buddhism. And I think almost everybody, I think, would agree. Why shouldn't we have the highest happiness? If the highest happiness is there to be attained, surely that makes sense to actually go for that goal of the highest possible happiness. So that is what it's all about, basically. Yeah. Please ask beginners questions. There's no shame in that. There are many people here, I'm sure, who are come for the first time. So don't be frightened of that. Yes. Okay, the fear of change. Yeah, okay. It depends, you know, what you mean, I suppose, by fear of change. But usually you start in the small things, you know. You start with the things which are easy to change. You ask yourself, well, how can I improve my life a little bit? How can I do a little better? How can I be a kinder and more gentle and more generous and more compassionate person in my life? And most people don't fear that kind of change. Usually it comes quite naturally. And then you build on that. You become more compassionate and you ask yourself the next step, well, how can I become even more compassionate and kinder? How can I do this step by step, going upwards, moving ahead? And then you will see that what you may have seemed fearful on an earlier occasion actually becomes something very natural inside of you. You may change in ways that you never expected, and it becomes beautiful. So don't actually don't think about your change. Just do what is right and see what happens. And what you will see is that your mind changed in a very positive and very nice way. And I can almost assure you, you're going to be very happy with that. It's not something you're going to regret. But don't worry about the mind. Just do what is right and see what happens. If you have big problems, you can always go and ask Ajahn Brahm. Don't ask me. See how it goes. Okay. Anybody else want to ask anything? Yes, at the back. Yeah, well, I mean, the point is that Nibbana is the meaning, right? That is the end point. So you can't really go beyond that. But yeah, it is the highest possible happiness. I think that's good enough. You know, if you reach the highest possible happiness, there's no point in asking for meaning anymore because you have achieved the highest possible. You reach the end. It's like saying, you know, what is the purpose of achieving the highest happiness? Well, that's it. You know, you got it. You reached it. It's a bit like you're an Olympic athlete because the Olympics are coming up soon, and your goal is to win the particular event. Well, then you win. And that's really the goal in its own right, isn't it? There's nothing more beyond that. You have won. You've made it. That's it. And the same thing, once you achieve the highest happiness, well, you have achieved the best thing that anybody can achieve in this universe. Why on earth would you go on seeking for anything more? There's no point. You have reached the highest. Okay, so let's pay our respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. If you wish, you can take part. If you don't want to, that's okay. Yeah.
Sāpatipanno bhagavato sāvaka sangho
Sangha.